Thanks to my old friend Roger Rehm and to Bill Campbell for the invitation to speak to the Philadelphia Society. I'm truly honored to have this opportunity. And also, apropos of this panel, a bit of personal history. I've been a golfer since I was about 8. And speaking with these two guys is about like being invited to fill out a threesome with Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson. Well, Phil over here has just split the fairway 300 yards, and here I am standing the first tee with a driver wobbling in my hands. I'll try to do the best I can. Now, I've entitled my talk, "The Conventional Wisdom on Higher Education. It's not just wrong, but harmful." And the case I'm about to present to you is one that's been in my mind since, I think I can date this fairly accurately, September of 1980. Now, just a bit of personal history. After rather foolishly deciding to earn a law degree in the mid-1970s, I realized that practicing law wasn't really what I wanted to do and that I would much rather teach. So, while job hunting in the summer of 1980, I was lucky enough to hear about a small college that happened to be utterly desperate for someone with a free market mentality who could teach economics, business law, and a few other courses. Well, I applied for that job, and surprisingly enough, got hired. So I started preparing quickly for the courses I'd be teaching that fall, one of which was a course in ethics for juniors and seniors. And about 2 weeks into the semester, the book of readings, one of the readings, happened to mention social justice. And I thought, all right, it's time to lower the boom on the students. I'm going to have them read some Hayek. Hayek, of course, has famously criticized the whole idea of social justice, saying it's just a meaningless, dangerous idea. So I copied out a few pages from his book, The Mirage of Social Justice, handed them out to the students at the end of the class on Thursday, and said, I would like you to read this, be prepared to discuss it on Monday. Well, in Monday's class, I asked several questions which were designed to elicit a discussion about what Hayek had said. Well, after several questions eliciting nothing but downcast eyes and picking at fingernails and staring out the window, I was getting a little bit discouraged. Finally, one student put up his hand, and I eagerly called on this fellow. And here's what he said. Remember John Kerry's line about something being seared into his memory back in 2004 when he gave that? Well, this was seared into my memory. The student said, couldn't you just, you know, tell us the main point? Well, I tried to gently rebuke him and the class by saying the college should not be simply about memorizing a few main points, but rather about learning how to pry out meaning on your own. After all, you can't go through life just waiting for people to tell you the main point. Well, that incident had a big impact on me. I had already begun to suspect that a lot of my students were not much interested in learning, and this class confirmed it. As I got to know them better and better, I realized that very few of them had any sparks of intellectual curiosity. Most of them were academically weak and disengaged. They had reading and writing skills that would have been regarded as very poor for grade schoolers back when I was in grade school. Mostly, they were in college because it was fun to be away from mom and dad, and because they had come to believe that having a college degree was a guarantee of a good career and prosperity. I began to see, in other words, that college had been oversold. Well, my teaching career came to an end in the fall of 1989, and the reasons for that are also pertinent to this talk. For quite a few years, I had been ignoring the suggestions from the administration that I was too hard on the students. True, my grade average was among the lowest of the faculty. There were only a couple of really hard-nosed accounting professors who regularly had lower averages than I did. Now, the problem with that was that some of the students were choosing to take business law at a community college in the area where the grades were high, the work was low, but that's not what bothered the administration, of course. What bothered the administration was that they were losing out on some revenue. Therefore, I was given an ultimatum. I was told I had to make my courses more user-friendly, or else my contract would not be renewed. Well, I didn't think that I was too hard on the students. Those who made any decent effort were able to pass the course. The problem was, as I saw it, that a large percentage of the students at this particular college, and I'm sure that this is a very large percentage of college students in general today, were used to passing courses in high school without putting forth the least bit of effort. And they resented any professor who made their life a little bit unpleasant by requiring of them reading and studying and such unpleasantries as that. Well, instead of caving into the administration and making my courses more user-friendly, I decided to quit. I had simply had enough. Well, 10 years later, I was hired to work at the think tank as the director of the Pope Center in North Carolina. At that time, it was a branch of the John Locke Foundation. Now it's an independent 501c3. And as I began to immerse myself in the world of higher education, I began to see that there's a conventional wisdom about higher education. In other words, a galaxy of ideas that most people accept. Especially, these ideas are accepted by politicians and by education leaders. Now, at the center of this galaxy, to continue with my astronomical illusion, there is a pulsar that sends out the core idea. It's very simple. More education is good. More education is good. More education is good. Now, the education here means formal education. Excluded is any education that occurs on the job or is undertaken individually. Now, it's not that such education is necessarily bad, but we must, according to these people, place our trust and confidence in education experts and courses that they have overseen and have approved of. So what I want to do in my remaining time is talk about some of these main ideas in this galaxy of conventional wisdom. And the first one that I'd like to bring up is this. College education adds to a person's knowledge and skill base, thereby increasing his lifetime earnings. Now, we hear constantly that getting a college degree is a great investment for both the individual and for the nation. And we hear that people who have college degrees earn much, much more than do people who are without them. And it's almost always assumed that having the college degree is what is responsible for having higher earnings. And only if we could get more people through college, we'd have a whole lot more prosperity in society. Now, it's true that on average, people who have college degrees do earn substantially more than people who don't. But it does not follow that it's the college degree that causes them to have higher earnings. Nor does it follow that putting any person through college who doesn't have a college degree is automatically going to confer upon him a great boost in earnings. In fact, it will probably confer upon him no boost in earnings whatsoever. And certainly not that $1 million figure that is oftentimes carelessly thrown around by education leaders these days and politicians. Now, I'm certainly not saying that going to college never does anyone any good. I think I learned a few useful things in my college days. I really, really hope that my son, who's now a junior at Duke, majoring in math and biology, I really hope he's adding to his human capital, for all I'm paying for it. My contention, though, is that a lot of people who go to college gain little or no benefit from it, like those students I had way back in the 1980s. Many of them go through college and end up with just an education in name only, not any real benefit, lasting benefit to their skills and ability. Now, it's, I think, clearly true that most of the people who go to college would already be very successful in the business world or whatever career they choose to follow because they have higher innate levels of skill, greater ambition. That's why they make more money. They'd make more money anyway. Whether college adds to their productivity or not, they'd still be financially successful. On the other hand, though, it's quite clear that many of those who now have a college education derive little or no benefit from it. Now, several years ago, I discovered the one piece of government statistics that I find useful. It's the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And they keep track of the educational level of people in a vast array of jobs in America. And recently, I was at that site and pulled out a couple of little data points that are of interest. For example, in the job category called baggage porters and bellhops. 33% of them have, quote, some college, meaning that they've taken some classes but didn't get a degree, and 16% of them have a bachelor's degree or higher. And then in the job category, ushers, lobby attendants, and ticket takers. 30% of them have some college, and 17.5% have a BA or higher. And there's much, much more information like that on the BLS website if you ever want to look at it. I think all this indicates that we have indeed greatly oversold college. We have a glut of college graduates spilling over into jobs that, as Rich mentioned, don't require any advanced economic preparation whatsoever, or academic preparation whatsoever. Now, if you think a country can pull itself up by the bootstraps economically just by putting more and more people through college, you're badly mistaken. The truth of the matter is that trying to do that, as the United States has been doing and Britain tried to do under the Blair government, could only make a country poorer by wasting its resources through an overexpanded education sector. All right, idea number two. Economic growth and competitiveness depends on an increasing level of educational attainment. Now, it's widely believed that our national prosperity hinges on maintaining a high level of formal education in the labor force, and best of all, to have the position of international leadership. Now, this idea was given a terrific boost last February in his speech to Congress when President Obama asserted that the country needs to regain the place we once held as having the highest percentage of college graduates in the world. More education is better. More education is better. Now, the trouble here is that there simply is no necessary relationship between the level of formal education and prosperity in a nation. Just as there is no necessary connection between an individual's educational level and his prosperity, so is there no necessary connection at the national level. Now, in an excellent and iconoclastic book written in 2003 by Alison Wolf, entitled Does Education Matter? And she's a professor at the King's College in London. She examined this assumption that there's some connection between degree of formal education in a country and its prosperity. And she found that there is no such connection. She pointed, for instance, to Switzerland, which doesn't really put much stock in higher education, doesn't promote it, which is a very prosperous country. And on the other hand, she pointed to countries like Egypt, which have gone to great lengths trying to promote education as an economic catalyst and have failed. There's no such connection. The prosperity of a nation does not come from pushing more and more people through college. Rather, it's a result of finding the optimal level of investment in physical and human capital. Now, individuals and firms are pretty good at discovering the level of knowledge and training that is best for them. And much of that knowledge and training does not come from formal education, but it comes from on-the-job and personal training, education. Now, I've often heard it said that America's great post-war economic surge was due to the fact we put many people through college under the GI Bill. But I think that's baloney. Back when my grandfather was a young man starting a business about a century ago, the United States had a highly skilled and educated workforce. But most of that skill and education was derived outside of formal education. We had no shortage of excellent engineers, architects, accountants, lawyers, teachers, and so forth, but few of them had any college education. The GI Bill did not give us a more educated workforce. All it did was to put a college degree in front of the process of learning those occupations. And eventually, having college credentials would become a requirement for a great many fields. But that's not because the fields are so difficult you can't possibly learn them unless you've been to college. Rather, college is now treated as a proving ground just as high school used to be. And what about the fact that some nations now surpass the United States in terms of the percentage of the labor force that has college credentials to their names? Well, Belgium and Finland are two that have surpassed the United States in this respect. And many people are worrying about India and China, thinking that, well, they're really investing heavily in education, and isn't that some sort of serious threat to the United States? Well, I think we should stop worrying. If it truly makes the Belgians and the Finns and the Chinese and the Indians more prosperous and more productive to push through higher education, fine, although I'm skeptical that's true. I think it's rent-seeking on the part of their own higher ed establishments. But it doesn't tell us anything about what we should do. And given the fact that we already have lots and lots of bellhops and ticket takers and mail delivery people who have college degrees, it obviously is not going to be a good use of resources for us to push more people through college. All right, idea number three. College education leads to good social outcomes, such as better health and civic participation. Now, advocates for higher education establishment oftentimes haul out this argument, that the nation benefits from having more people with college degrees because there are ancillary social benefits. For example, a report called the National Report Card on Higher Education claims that besides the supposed economic benefits of putting people through college, there are also social benefits such as higher voting percentages, more volunteerism, and increased charitable giving. And I've even heard it said that college is good because it gets people out of smoking. Well, no doubt those outcomes correlate with college, but I don't think it's true that college is their cause. People who are more inclined to civic participation and disinclined to smoke are apt to choose to go to college, but there's no reason to believe that being in college changes people in these respects. In fact, I think there's some evidence that it doesn't do so, starting with a certain well-known smoker who went to Columbia and Harvard Law School and now lives at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. So if there are indeed behaviors like this that we'd like to encourage, putting through people through college is a very ineffective way of trying to promote them. All right, in the time I have left, and how much is that, by the way?
Three or four minutes.
Okay, good. I'd like to talk a bit about some of the harms that come about from our mania for higher education. One of them is credential inflation. Now, one of the consequences of overselling higher education is credential inflation. That is to say, once we have a certain level of formal education that becomes commonplace, well, then people have to move up to a higher one if they want to distinguish themselves. Stanford University professor David Labery really hit the nail on the head in a book of his entitled How to Succeed in School Without Really Learning. And here's what he wrote about credential inflation. The difficulty posed by the glut of graduates isn't that the population becomes overeducated, but that it becomes over-credentialed, as people pursue diplomas less for the knowledge they acquire than for the access the diplomas provide. The result is a spiral of credential inflation, as each level of education, in turn, gradually floods with a crowd of ambitious consumers. Individuals have to keep seeking higher credential levels in order to move a step ahead of the pack. In such a system, nobody wins. This is an enormously wasteful system. So now we have it, the work that used to be done by people with high school educations now must be done only by people with BA degrees. And many jobs that used to be done by people with BAs now require an MBA or something even higher than that. Now, all of this formal education is oftentimes irrelevant to the work that's being done. But people have to spend a lot of time and money getting these useless credentials. Secondly, we are dumbing down the educational system, and not just at the college level. Another adverse consequence of overselling is that we are dumbing down not only college education, but the entire educational system. Now, as colleges have sought to keep growing by accepting more and more students who are weak and disengaged and really don't belong in college at all, what they have done is accommodated those students and their lack of interest in learning by watering down the curriculum and inflating grades. Temple University English professor Stephen Zelnick writes that academic standards went slack at Temple when it decided to open its doors to all and sundry in order to pay its bills. So we have plunging academic standards, inflating grades, and now the curriculum at many colleges is cluttered with courses in pop culture and leftist manias like sustainability. As a result, employers find that many college graduates can't write a clear paragraph or do simple math, but they can hector you all day long on the imperative of recycling. Furthermore, since most high school graduates now go to college, it's about 70%, the pressure on high schools to make sure that their students can actually read and write has been minimized. With colleges doing the remedial education, high schools can slide along their easy and preferred path of just patting students on the head and saying, you tried, that's good, you pass. And third, bad influence. Now, earlier today we talked about the character formation problem. And I think actually there is a lot of character formation that goes on in colleges. The trouble is it's all bad. Under the influence of professors who exemplify what Jonah Goldberg calls liberal fascism, students oftentimes learn that it's virtuous to become an activist busybody, eager to enlist government coercion to dictate to everyone else what they must and must not do. So yes, we're getting character formation, and it's very bad character formation. All right, in closing, I will say this. You've probably heard it said, I've heard it said so many times, I wish I had a nickel for every instance, that the United States is a prosperous country because we do such a great job and educate so many of our students. Actually, the truth is the other way around. Only a very prosperous country such as the United States could possibly afford to have such a wasteful and ineffective educational system. Thank you.